In this episode, I talk to James Becerra from Sydney in Australia about what it takes to be a great manager of a multi-location practice with 20-plus staff generating $2 million plus annually. 10 is up nice and loud for what is an amazing episode about what it takes to be a really great manager of a practice. Enjoy the show. This is the Paul Gough Audio Experience. Whether you call yourself a PT, a physical therapist, or a physiotherapist, and wherever you're listening to this right now, this is for you. It is me revealing everything I can to help make you a more successful business owner. Thanks for listening. It means the absolute world to me. Hey, this is Paul, and welcome to another podcast. Very, very happy to head over to Australia. We're going to speak to the amazing James Becerra, who is the owner of Simply Physio in Sydney, where we are headed in the next few weeks. Wonderful episode coming up. First, let me tell you about a few things that we've got going on. We've got the financial skills and annual planning two-day workshops in Orlando. It's almost full. I think we've got one spot left at the time of talking to you. The UK, we're going to be over in, we're not actually in the UK, we're just outside of the UK, technically, in Ireland. We're going to be in Dublin, we're in the British Isles, I guess. We're going to be in Dublin on Tuesday the 14th and 15th of, sorry, Wednesday and the Thursday the 14th and 15th of December. We'll probably be in the pub on Tuesday the 13th of December drinking a nice pint of Irish Guinness. So if you want to come and see us and say hello, if you're listening to this, we're going to be talking through your marketing plan for 2023. We will sharpen your financial skills. We'll look at what financial clarity really is and the six things that you really should be focusing on just to give yourself a bit more confidence in your numbers and growing your business in 23. We'll talk about hiring. We'll talk about your annual budget. We'll put together what is a very unique workshop which combines numbers with people and marketing, the business end, if you like, of running a business. So if you're serious about growth in 23, head over to paulgough.com/finance. Come and say hello to us in person. And of course, we're going to be in Sydney 7th and 8th of January. We are, I think at this point, we're about 9 seats down for a room of 12. So again, get in touch. James, who you're about to hear from, will be there. We've got people coming in from all across the state as well, or across the country, not just the state of New South Wales. We will also be bringing people together from New Zealand. So we are excited to get to that part of the world to come and say hello to you. So James Becerra, let me tell you about James. James is a client that I've had the pleasure of working with from, I think it was 2019 he first got in touch. Told me on this podcast that he'd been listening to the podcast since episode number 2. And a couple of years later, finally gets in touch. And I think he started maybe with Accelerator or the Business Growth School program. But it's just a permanent reminder to everybody listening to this that clients are not won overnight. It isn't a one and done thing. It's a often a multi-step, multimedia, multi-year, in fact, approach to getting clients and really allowing the clients, the customers, the patients to get to know you before they get to you so that when they do, they are they're just bought into what you're about, and they kind of know who you are and what you represent and what you stand for. So never lose sight of that as you listen to the podcast and you start to hear us talk about those types of things that, contrary to what most people think, marketing isn't just about getting a call from a customer. It's about shaping their understanding of who you are so that when they do show up, they're already bought into what you're about. And that's ultimately how the relationship with James came across or came about. And for me, it never ceases to amaze me. The biggest thrill that I ever get is when you find out that somebody from Sydney has been listening to my podcasts that I was putting out in a little old town called Hartlepool in the United Kingdom that James had probably never heard of. If you think that cool things don't happen in life, well, I think that they do, and anything is possible. So put yourself out there, get your marketing fired up, talk to clients in a way that they can understand, educate them, help them. Whatever business you are in, it's very, very simple. The person that solves the most problems wins, and it isn't necessarily the problem of, in the case of a physio, it's not necessarily the physical problem that the patient suffers with. It's the emotional angst, internal strife that the person has about what they should do about their problem. That's always the biggest thing that you have to crack. And if you crack that nut, people come to you in their droves. The more that they understand that you understand them, is when the magic starts to happen. So without further ado, I'm going to hand you over to James, where we speak about management and developing great managers of your business. James has took a little bit of a step out of patient care, and he's been at the ops manager level of his business. We're going to talk about the lessons that he's learned in managing a business. We're going to talk about what it takes to be a great ops manager, and what you need to look for in potentially hiring one. We're going to talk about what a physio should look like, a really, really good new grad physio should look like. And we get into talking all about marketing and communication, and really just bringing it home as to what it takes to build a business. To give you some context to set the scene, James is a multi-clinic owner with, I think I've lost count of the number of staff, 20 plus staff across a couple of different sites over there in Sydney, a couple of $1 million in revenue. James is the real deal. He's a great thinker. He's very sharp. He's very to the point, which is what I love about Australians. They are they'll tell you to, you know, very, very quickly what they're thinking. And James is a very smart business mind. He's in my CEO program and the mastermind as well. And I'm looking forward to catching up with him in person for the first time in Sydney in a couple of weeks. So turn us up nice and loud and listen to this episode that we're calling The Secrets of Becoming a Great Manager for Your Practice. Enjoy the show. Right, welcome everybody. Welcome. We are we're all the way around the world. We are about 17 hours ish behind. It is Wednesday night in Orlando. The sun is just about to set, and the sun is just coming up on the other side of the world in Sydney. We're with James Becerra. We're in the middle of Sydney, and we're going to talk about life as a physio practice owner with James. The trials, the tribulations, the joys, the laughs, the giggles, the tears of running a private practice in any country is exactly the same. And this is what I love. The reason I love doing these podcasts and just generally meeting people all over the world, and I do love it, it's the perspective that you get when you talk to people. Everybody thinks their little country is different, or their little world is different, or their little town is different. And it's like, Paul, you don't know what the Aussies are like. It's different over here. It's different over here. And then I come to America, it's like, Paul, you do not know what Americans are like. It's different over here. And I'm like, you don't know what the Brits are like. They're fucking different, right? Like, everybody's different wherever you go. I'm like, as long as they've got a head, two hands, like three parts to the brain. The only time I would accept that somebody is different, if you tell me that people in Australia don't watch TV, like that would be the thing that would spook me. If they don't watch TV, then they're different. But as long as they watch TV, and then I think that's about it. So, James, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it. It's been really cool.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, you know, we've known each other now for a few years. I remember the day I was first talking to you. I remember it. I think I was in Texas. Was I in Austin? I remember talking to you.
Or possibly New York, maybe?
I was somewhere. I'm pretty sure. I think it was Austin. I'd been to a conference. And yeah. I'm sure it was a Sunday afternoon. I was there. It was the weekend Tiger Woods won the Masters, if I remember right. And I was thinking about this.
Actually, you're right. And you were finishing a conference.
I always track back the origin story to anybody that you know I speak to, and it was around about 2019.
2019.
I was in Austin. I'd been to a 4-day conference. It was Sunday afternoon. It'll have been early morning for you in Sydney. We were talking mm-hmm. about your business and what you needed and all of those things. So I remember it very, very well. And even the Australia, you know, kind of market, if you like, we've worked now with clients for probably 4 or 5 years, different clients from different parts of Australia. So it was fantastic to talk to you. And obviously over the last few years, get to know you well and watch your business grow and you grow, and you're now part of our CEO program. We were just saying, this is the freshest I've ever seen James. And James, I've got to acknowledge this for everybody listening. So James is part of our CEO program. So I've just had Natty on. He's part of group three. You're in group four. And Natty has the odious or the painstaking task of flying down from New Jersey. And he thinks that's a ball ache to jump on a flight for 2 hours to come to Orlando. James has the task of staying up all night, quite literally. We watch the sun go down when James joins the CEO program virtually at 9 o'clock in Australia. We watch the sun go down in the background, and we watch it come back up in the next on the next day, and James is still in the CEO program. So for me, James is just a star. And when anybody tells me any bullshit about their don't have time for stuff, or they can't make classes or courses, I think of James. And I've got to give Simon Naroki over there in Melbourne a mention as well, who does the same thing. So I just think you're amazing for that level of work ethic. So I love having you on the show. So tell us a little bit about your business. Put everybody in the loop. Where are you exactly? The size of the business, the number of employees. Just give us a little bit of a heads up, and then tell us your story.
Yeah, nice. Well, we're a physio practice based in Sydney. We have four locations now. I started in 2015. So yeah, since 2015, we've grown to four locations. We have about 17 or 18 employees at the moment, and looking for a few more to start next year. So we're hoping to grow the team to about 20. And yeah, look, we're spread all across Sydney. We've strategically done that. So, you know, each of our locations are in, you know, four different major parts of Sydney. Yeah, and it's been a, you know, pretty fun ride. And you talk about, you know, the journey starting in 2019, but the journey for me, listening to you, I listened to your podcast from the very first episode, like I think that was like 14 or 15 maybe.
Wow, yeah, 2015 probably.
Yeah. When I first followed it, you only had two episodes on the podcast.
Is that right?
Two or three. And I'd caught up and pretty much was listening to them every week. So, yes, the journey for us started in 19, but for me, it started way, way earlier, 15 maybe, or something like that.
It's nuts when you hear that. You know, it is. It's, you never, ever take it for granted. And I hope people listening think, where's their version of that? You know, people are watching what you're doing, or they're listening to what you're doing, and it doesn't necessarily translate to kind of any commercial relationship or whatever it will be for however many years. But it's fascinating, and you know, I never ever take it for granted when you hear that somebody in Australia is listening to your podcast, and I'm putting that podcast out from a little old town in Hartlepool, this tiny little economically challenged town, and there's some guy strutting around Sydney in his car listening to my podcast. Like, I'm surprised you don't speak English at this point if you've listened to that many. There must be some English, like, shit comes out if you listen to me that much.
Look, you know, I probably do. I think if you ask some of my team, and they, if they listen to you when you come to Sydney, and they probably think that I definitely say some things that you say. So there's definitely that happening. But look, the English accent, I don't know if we want to copy that anyway. So it's
fine. I mean, you've took lots from us over the years, you know, the ashes and various things. You might as well take the accent as well. You've got a new king now as well, haven't you? You Aussies. I mean, I've got to get that one in quite early, and a queen.
Not my choice, hey.
I cannot wait for the. It's the thing I love about the Aussies. The sense of humour is fantastic, and I always remember being in the Ashes game. For those, again, I'll have to be open, there's people all over the world. The Ashes is England against Australia, right, in cricket. Mm-hmm. It's, for Americans, it's basically baseball, but kind of how the English and the Aussies hit the ball with a bat.
And it's like the World Series. It's the biggest.
It's the biggest. I mean, it's the second biggest sport in the world. Yeah, it's the second biggest sport in the world. And Australia versus England is that sort of ultimate Ashes test, you know, whatever it will be, where it comes from. But I remember watching a game there, England against Australia, and I always remember the English singing. They were dressed up. One of the English fans, you know what the Brits are like when we come over, the Barmy Army. One of them was dressed as Prince Charles, and one of them was dressed as Camilla Parker Bowles. And the song was, they were singing to the Aussies, you know, the 20,000 English were all singing to the Aussies, "Your next queen is Camilla Parker Bowles." And I'm like, I never ever forget it. This was 10 years ago, and it made me laugh. For the entirety of the day, the idea that English were singing "Your next queen is Camilla Parker Bowles," not "Your next king is you know, Prince Charles," it's Camilla Parker Bowles. So anyway, that's
it's something we don't have a choice around, so it's fine. We'll take the slack for now.
My love affair with Australia started there with the sense of humour and the cricket and all of that stuff. And the best day of my life, I don't know if I told you this, but the best day of my life in sport. It was when I told you about the day that the guy got a hat trick. What was his name who got the hat trick? I think it was Tremlett, the English cricketer Tremlett got the hat trick against what was his name? Mitchell Johnson. And I remember thinking, surely not. It's going to be a hat trick. And then there it was. There's the hat trick and 30,000 fans. I was actually pictured in the national press doing the. I've probably still got the picture somewhere. I was pictured in the British national press the next day, just in the background. Like I'd been caught and a few people had seen it. Well, it was one of the best days of my life in Sydney. So I'm really looking forward to going back to the SCG to watch a little bit of cricket. But anyway, right. I always go off topic with the fun stuff. What's happening in your business? Let's start off with some good stuff. What are you really loving about your business right now? What's good?
Yeah, look, it's we're at a point in the business where I think we're very clear on where we want to be going and what that looks like. And even with hiring at the moment, one of the things that because I do that with a team now. Before it used to be just me hiring, but now there's one or two more people involved. And one of the things that I keep saying, which is really really cool to be saying, which I probably wouldn't have done even a year, 2 years ago, is we know now what it looks like to be a switch physio and how to hire for that. So there's some really good things that are happening in the business at the moment. Where very clearly where you want to be and where you want to go. This has probably been one of the more challenging years for us compared to the last 2 years during COVID. The 2 years of COVID, really good growth periods for us. This has been a bit more of a challenging year, but on the same token, I think that it's been good to kind of look back and after two really good successful growth years, kind of go, okay, cool, like, what got us through those 2 years necessarily didn't help us this year. And now we're sitting there going, okay, well, how do we take it to the next level? Which I think is really good to be able to look at that from a success, whilst it may not seem successful, but it's good to be able to then now go, okay, well, what do we need to change to grow again in the next year or two?
I love that then. So what is it? I think that's the burning question I've got. What was happening in that 2 years of stability? What did you feel in, let's say, the last 12 months? What was the change?
Well, I guess the change in the last 12 months, I think in the 2 years of growth, we were doing certain things where the team was able to sustain that. And I was in their wheelhouse. The biggest things that helped us, and we're talking during COVID, right? And, we had lockdowns that were pretty harsh and things like that.
Again, for full context for everybody listening, I don't know if people understand how bad it was over there in Australia and how recently you guys only really came out of COVID from a go and enjoy your life point of view not that long ago.
Versus
somewhere like Florida, we had 6 weeks of it. We had 6 weeks of lockdown and that was it. And I'm listening to you guys and talking to you and thinking, holy shit, 2 years later, you're still under house arrest, like one step behind China by the sound of it over there.
Sydney, Melbourne was much worse than us. Sydney wasn't as bad, but we still had huge lockdowns, but we were allowed to continue trading and people come and see us in person. So we had that ability to still trade as per normal. We didn't have to really push telehealth that much. We did a little bit of it, but for some clients that maybe weren't so comfortable coming into the clinic, but we had the ability to still treat in person. And I think at that time we had to really, utilize the strengths of the team, and one of the biggest things we did then was actually probably come closer and stronger as a team, because one of the things we all realized was how grateful we were, first of all, to still have a job. A lot of people, in our industry, especially if you worked in inner city locations and stuff like that, people were losing their businesses and people were losing their jobs as physios. But some of the suburban physios were able to continue. I guess maybe the working from home kind of helped with that. But one of the things that I think grew the team was that we were able to come together stronger as a team and work as a team and be able to be grateful for the fact that we can still help people and still grow the business. Those 2 years were massive in that respect. I think, we've discussed this recently in CEO, when you then have some stability and you start looking for growth, and we opened up our fourth clinic this year, the dynamics of the business change. And then when those dynamics of the business change, you have to, in hindsight, it'd be cool if you can change with those dynamics, but you know, that hasn't happened as we would have wished this year. But we can now look back at it and go, okay, cool, what was happening this year with those dynamic shifts that we can then change? And it comes down to really changing the team, not changing the team like wholesalely, but, you know, changing a few things in the team in terms of the dynamics and how we can then grow a little bit more.
I think as I reflect on COVID and just watching the trends, what you saw was, I think in the early phase, there was so much fear around generally, obviously, from employees, right? So you got that first, I just want to do a really good job. I want to stay in my job. I want to keep my job and I want to stay in this job. And then as time went on and obviously everyone got released, it was like, oh, actually, this is a whole new world now. You know, literally is a whole new world. And then as we've saw, every town, every state, every country has experienced this mass resignation or whatever they're calling it, where people are literally job hopping. I've had friends, in 2.5 years, I could say I've had, my family included, have had 2, 3, 4 jobs. That wouldn't be unnormal to hear somebody that in that period of time, in the last year, 18 months, has had multiple jobs. That was unheard of years ago. So there's been a societal shift. And I think people are generally a little bit more, I've got a scratch, I need an itch. There's just something not right. Like I've got to find something. And I think you get that. And that's probably what you experienced a little bit of. That, you know, as you bounce back, if you like. Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned now we know what a good, you know, what type of physio we want. What does a good physio look like for you? What are you looking for as you recruit?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think what we got really clear on was, you know, in the past when we were hiring, I would always go, okay, what does the right fit look like for Switch personality-wise? And, you know, we hired hugely on personality. We never really hired on skill because, you know, we are a service-based industry and we, you know, the biggest thing in our industry, I think, is being able to communicate and connect with clients. You know, I can teach someone how to be a physio. I can't teach someone to have a bit of personality. So that was what we really looked for at the start. And that's still at the core of what we're looking for. But then, you know, what we then kind of realized is that, you know, what was unique to us as a business was the way in which, you know, our systems and processes ran.
Yeah.
And that was the next layer of knowing exactly what a Switch physio looked like was, you know, when we're looking for someone, we're looking for someone who is not just great personality wise and be a good fit in the team, but also someone that's diligent at some of those systems and processes that we would put in place. And, you know, so we're now looking for people that, you know, have had some sort of experience, not necessarily doing the exact systems and processes that we have. I don't expect that, but some experience in, you know, not just treating a client and see what happens kind of things. Like, have you had experience of, you know, being in a business that has looking for growth and is looking to apply our systems and processes, you know, not just from how we approach an injury, but, you know, how we communicate with that client ongoing, you know, how we keep the relationship going with them, you know, all those kind of things. And not everyone has that, but they may have done that in another role, you know, like if they've worked in a bar before, or if they've worked in retail before, you know, did they have experience of, you know, having to keep relationships with customers, not just they just come in and out they go kind of thing. And they're the kind of things that we're now looking for that we know are then going to be successful, you know, when they start working with us, because I can teach them how to be a physio. I can teach them how to treat a neck, but we want to know that they can then adapt to those kind of things as well.
Who's responsible for that then in your office? We've got 17, 18 employees. It's a pretty, you know, decent sized business for many people in physio. That's a good business. You know, the typical might have 6 to 8. We've got 17, 18 employees. What's the time commitment or the people commitment to the people inside of the office?
Yeah. Look, that's probably one of the things we noticed this year that we need to improve on. You know, we did have a operations manager up until the start of the year. And I've taken over a little bit of that role because our operations manager has left. But up until then, the operations manager dealt with that predominantly. And then we have an admin manager, and we have clinic managers. So if we're looking for an admin person, it'd be the ops and the admin manager. If we're looking for a physio, it would be the ops and the clinic manager. And then I would get involved in later stages.
Yeah.
But we don't have the operations manager anymore. So, and we're looking for one. And so at the moment it's me doing that. And the time commitment's huge. Like, you know, for myself, it's, you know, every week, you know, I'm doing some sort of task or role, or spending a couple hours just trying to do some sort of recruitment. You know, if we're not having candidates, what ads are we changing? Where are we looking to put some more ads up? If we do have candidates, you know, who's vetting them? Who's interviewing them? So it's a huge commitment. But, you know, I think you need to, because you can't just accept the first person. You know, we've had job ads up since January of this year. And, you know, I'm sure across the world everyone's experiencing this. You're not going to get heaps of candidates at the moment. And whilst we haven't had a flood of candidates, we've also rejected a lot that have come in as well, because they weren't the right fit for us. They weren't going to fit a switch physio. So whilst it's frustrating, to it would be great to have a few extra team members, because we need them. You know, we also haven't found the right one either, so we're not going to pull the trigger until that happens.
Here's a question. So I ask this whenever I do interviews, right? So he's a good hack for you. Whenever I do interviews, I've gotten now to a point where I say some version of this. I've never hired an ops manager before. This is the first time I've ever recruited for an ops manager. I would like you to teach me what to look for in a really good ops manager. So I'm going to ask you, James, the question, as people listen to this, who are thinking about an ops manager or have an ops manager and they're not quite sure whether they've got a good one. So my question to you is, what have you learned about an ops manager's role? So obviously you're a fully licensed physio, right? But you've moved into the ops manager's role for your company. What have you learned about it? What makes a good one? Teach me.
Cool. What makes a good ops manager role? I think ops manager. I think first of all, you know, when I'm going to have a two-part answer to that, because when I wasn't the ops manager and I had someone working in that role, I think the first thing is you need someone that you can have deep conversations with around the business, because they're the ones that need to be have their eyes open across the business. And when you've got the ideas that you want to try or a process that you want to tweak or something like that, they're the ones that should be across that process. They don't have to be a physio. They don't have to know how to treat someone, but they need to be across the processes in your business, because when you want to tweak it to make it better, you need that person who's then going to be able to deliver that for you as well. So, you know, when you're not in that role, I think that's really crucial that you've got someone that has a good understanding of your business across all the systems and processes. For myself, jumping into that role, at first it was like, holy shit, there's a lot going on here. You know, it's different when you're you know, sitting above that, and it's very different if you're in the treatment room. You know, when you're in the treatment room, you're trying to juggle everything at once, right? When you step out of the treatment room, there's now a little bit, you have to create some control. I think, you know, being a physio who was in the treatment room and jumping out of it, it's very easy to try and keep juggling those balls like you were as a physio. You really have to take the time to get across how you're going to control all the different aspects, if that makes sense.
What did you notice? So all of a sudden, I imagine, I mean, I remember when I went from being a full-time physio, I cut the cord like overnight. I was in France. I was in Nice. I was in a place called Nice in France. And I remember it was July. Harry was due to be born in the October. And I was like, that's it, I'm done. I just hit an epiphany. I was like, I can't see another patient if I've ever, I've never touched another patient since back in that period of time, 7 or 8 years ago. And I remember coming into the clinic, and all of a sudden, about 2 weeks later, it was as if I was like, I was hearing things I'd never heard, and I was seeing things I'd never, they were always going on around me, right? They were always answering the phone this way, or they were always like doing some dumb shit over there in the corner. I was like, why are you doing that? And they're like, well, I've always been doing that. I'm like, have you?
Yeah.
Who let you do that? And they're like, you did. It's like, oh yeah, I was just too fucking busy doing all this other stuff, right? So what have you seen?
Yeah, literally that. Literally that. You know, like, and it's interesting because one of the biggest things that I did stepping out, you know, into the ops manager role was I took care of all the I now do all the management meetings. My ops manager did that, so now I do all that management meetings. So, yeah. You know, meetings with the clinic managers, meetings with all the different, the admin manager, all that kind of thing. But then after a couple of months, I realized that we needed that next level of accountability. So, you know, our managers would do the progress calls usually. And I was like, hang on a second, that's happened. Like, there's too many things, you know, that I, you know, when you're in the treatment room and when you step out that you probably didn't notice. And, you know, even for the managers that I started noticing, hey, you know, there's a few things here that we need to tweak. So I took over the progress calls of the staff at that time as well. And I think moving forward, I might keep that with the ops manager as well, because we're talking in systems and processes in those progress calls. And then we're not talking treatment. They can do that with the clinic managers. So moving forward, that's a thing I think that the ops manager will definitely do is progress calls moving forward as well. And I think that helped me get a handle of those things that were happening that I didn't realize were happening. But yeah, exactly the same thing, you know, you step out and they are doing things that you thought that, you know, wouldn't happen, or you're like, hang on a second, we don't do it that way.
And, not in my clinic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that does happen. You know, even simple things like, you know, the amount of times we've gone through a cancellation phone call and, you know, the scripts down pat, and, you know, we could practice that 10 times, 100 times, we could do it in a training day and they'd ace it. Yeah. And, you know, probably, let's say 50% of the time, they're probably acing that cancellation call. I'm not saying it's none. Yes. But then you're hearing a few now, like when you're not in the treatment room, you might hear back a few calls, you might hear back a few things, and you're like, well, hang on a second, like that's not even close to what we're doing. Yeah. And that requires attention. And that's why, you know, going back to what I said at the start, when you have an ops manager, they really need, you know, you're not going to have someone who knows all your systems and processes straight off the bat, but they got to want to first of all get across them and then show you and help you improve them as well and be a sounding board for your ideas too, to improve their systems and processes.
Yeah, what I've found is the ops people generally come in, they're very process driven. Mm-hmm. Good ops people, the majority of ops people lean towards process, which is fine. And they nearly always want to fix the processes for the business. But in the end, the magic's in the people. And you've got to try and find somebody that either starts as process and you kind of edge them more towards, that's great, you can keep fixing all these processes. But the people element of it is key here. The attitude, the character, the picking up on the behavior patterns, and just having every now and again, just an arm around somebody and a coffee that says, look, you know, take them out for a coffee or a glass of beer or whatever. And it's just like, come on, like, what's going on in your life? You're not really, I think about the ops managers that I've got across all of the companies, and I would describe their role as they don't really manage anybody, but they inspect everything. They're like, they're just busy, but like, they're just busy, right? And it's like, they can easily piss people off. And a good ops manager probably pisses everybody off because they find everything that's wrong. They find everything that's going wrong. They find everything that's going to go wrong. And like, they never talk to you unless something's going wrong. And I've had to realize that when the phone rings, let's say if it's Sophie, right? The one I speak to the most in this business. If it's Sophie, it's like, it's not going to be good. Like, there's just never anything good that girl's going to ring me with. So I have to condition myself to go, like, the bad news is what I need to hear, right? Rather than, I'm fucking sick of Sophie. All she ever does is tell me everything that's going wrong, right? Because that's kind of her job, to tell me that, like, these three employees aren't doing this payment thing right, or they aren't doing this, I don't know, update this spreadsheet right, or this ticket sale right, or whatever it'll be. That's her job. And you realize that the ops manager's job is to find the inefficiencies and hopefully find them before they become a tumor. Like, she's found them after 2 weeks rather than 2 years. And that's the reality of a good ops person's job, is you're just inspecting everybody else's.
Yeah. And I think that's why, like, as you mentioned, that being on top of and understanding what, like, how things are going with the people, it's why I think moving forward, like I mentioned, like, even just the progress calls, just checking in with the team, you know, we do it fortnightly, and that's been the biggest, I think, game changer for me. I think looking ahead, you know, because I do it now, the biggest transition is going to be getting the ops manager to do that, because I think, you know, being the founder and the owner of the business, I think, you know, the team do like having me jump on those calls as well. But to grow the business, it's not something that you can do, you know, long term. And, you know, finding a good ops manager who can do that, I think, is also key. You know, you're spot on there. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, you know, that's their job, to be across all those little things that, you know, go wrong and payment gets done wrong, or, you know, trackers, they're the bane of everyone's existence, you know, spreadsheets and trackers. And having someone on top of that. And sometimes you're right, like, you know, I'll sit there and I'll blow up that these trackers aren't done properly. And then, you know, I'll go, hang on a second, like, why is it? I go to that person, you know, you put an arm around their shoulder and like, what's going on here? Like, you know, we've gone through this. I know you know how to do it. You know, like, what's the go? And then they're like, oh, you know, this and this happened. And you know, I was under the pump the other day and, you know, more phone calls happened than usual. And you're like, okay, cool. Like, okay, well, now I can understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Now we're having a connection here, as opposed to, you know, you just come down and like, oh, why the fuck aren't the trackers done? And, you know, all that kind of thing. So I think, yeah, you're right. That's an important part of ops manager role. And I think, you know, naturally, that's probably one of the biggest things that, you know, I've gravitated towards, because that's just how I am. But you don't want, you know, I think you're right, you don't want an ops manager that's just a dictator either.
Yeah.
Then they've got to have that human element too. I think that's
They've got to be respected as well. That's the thing I find. They've got to be respected, and that's the business owner's task, I think, is to create that culture where people invite the ops manager in as a guest rather than an unwelcome pest, if you like. It's making it very clear that this person's here to really help. And what I find is, I bet you I only hear 10% of what actually she finds, because most of the time there's not that much to fix. It's just a remind that it isn't getting done.
Correct. And it's interesting you say that you don't want the ops manager to be a pest. I think that was one of the hardest things when we hired an ops manager. Yeah. They did see him as an outsider, and that was quite interesting. And I didn't expect that, to be honest. And, you know, then going into that role, and then myself, like, okay, cool, like, I'm the business owner, and so they kind of, you know, respect that. But you're right, having that person that then replaces that ops manager, they really do need to be respected. And that's huge.
I think that the key is that the business owner needs to understand what the ops manager is doing, right? So when you now understand the nuance of what the role is, that it's to be an inspector, to find things that are going wrong, but it's nothing malice. It's under the banner of, we know that we're all human, we all make mistakes, we all forget, we all have bad days, we all have weeks where we're heads up our ass or whatever. The ops manager's job is to come back in and go, okay, cool, like, you had a bad week, a bad day, but look, this needs to be done. I'm here for you, not working against you. And once you realize that's what their role is, the job of the business owner then is to kind of welcome that into the business and explain that it's, nah, look, like, this guy's here to help you, like, not to chastise. I often say, and like I said, I make it clear to my team, Sophie's job is to go in and irritate the life out of everybody in the nicest possible way. And she does, right? So she loves it. But I always say, 9 out of 10 times, she won't even bring it to me what she's found. So she's not grassing on people. She's not like being a sneak and going, oh, I found this and let's tell Paul. I don't fucking want to know half the time. It'll piss me off. That's the whole reason she's there, to stop me going to the moon, because I probably would when I find out that they haven't done the fucking spreadsheets for the 16th time I've been asked, right?
Yeah.
I'm not the guy with that level of compassion. Like, I haven't got it. It's like not a 60 in 3 seconds. And I've realized that if I stay away from all of that shit, same with customers, I've got no patience. Just keep me away from anything to do with complaints from customers and anything to do with staff being inefficient after I've told them 16 times. Like, this business will probably be all right. Like, so just put Paul in a corner and leave him, and it runs really well. But that means then you've got to find people like Sophie and instruct them on how to do their jobs and what they're doing for you, and then bring them in. And then that's where it goes all the way back to hiring. You've got to find people who like that level of, I get it. I haven't got an ego. I'm not insecure. I'm a good character. I know what you're doing here. I get it. thanks for helping me. I want to be successful in my role. It isn't about me being right all the time, or defending my corner, or, you know, going home from work thinking I've had a perfect day. It's actually about being part of a unit, part of a team, that somebody's just trying to say, like, that ball's been dropped. Let's just get it back. Mm. I'm not interested in why. Let's just get it back up. Unless it keeps happening, then I'm interested in why.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even you touched on in there, like, when you're trying to, you know, it's very easy to go to 0 to 60 very quickly. And, you know, that's usually how it happens. But one of the things that I found, and you guys, you've done this a lot as well, is like just the way you phrase the questions, right? It's like, so, you know, when you go in there, it's very easy to go 0 to 60, but I've had to learn, okay, cool, like, what's good, but where do you need help as well? Like, so instead of, you know, like coming out and you're like this, like, and you inevitably we get there, right? Yeah. Like, so if you say what's good, like, of course they're gonna highlight what's really, really good, and, you know, the things that patch over the things that they're fucking up, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's cool. Like, we want to get that out there. But then my next question always is like, cool, but where do you need the help? Like, that's good. That's good that you're doing that. But what's really going on underneath? And yeah, cool, they might like give you that answer at the start. They might like try and divert it. But I just go, yeah, but I know you can do that. So where do you really need the help? And then like everything just opens up. And as opposed to going, hey, you fucked up this spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to fix that? It's like, it's a complete, and I had to learn that a lot, you know, doing ops manager role. But yeah, that just that change in questioning opens up a whole different dynamic.
What changed for me was when I understood the concept of management. Management, I remember saying this to Tiffany in my agency team, when she was getting a bit frustrated over one or two employees who kept missing things, didn't do what she told them two or three times. And I said, you do realize you're employed because of their incompetence.
That
isn't me being disrespectful, right? I've had two business coaches today that I've been speaking to. They just both fell today because of various things, right? Like, that's my version of accountability. I've got incompetence, I've got inefficiencies, I've got blind spots, I've got weaknesses. I've had two nights this week with 3 hours sleep for whatever reason with kids, right? You're like, you just have days where you're like, you're not going to be on form. Like, you're going to do your best, and you're not bringing an excuse to it, but you are from time to time. So you need somebody who just kicks you up the ass. What's good? Where are you struggling? What do you need? How do you need, you know, what can I do to help you? And I think when I understood that management's job was to make other people more efficient, all of the like frustration went away. It wasn't my job to point fingers and shout and rant and rave. My job was to sit over the top of five or six people and basically just say, I know you're all human. And on a normal average day, you might come in 75, 80%. But if I can get you 85 or 90, I've got 50% more output from five people. That's all going to land in my bank at the end of the month. And that's where it changed for me, is not seeing it as a attack that I've told you and you haven't done it. Mm-hmm. You know, which when you think about that, you take it personally, because it's like, why didn't you listen to me? There's an element of that, and that's where bad managers click in. Those people shouldn't be managers, right? The journey that we go on, I think, as manager is, first of all, you've got to be able to manage yourself. Then can I manage somebody else? And then can I manage other people to manage other people? And what you often find unbelievable in healthcare clinics, where the guy or the girl that's running the office is usually the long servant award, right? They're like, they've been in there for 17 years and somehow they're managing like seven people. They couldn't manage Toffee. Like, there's not a thing that they could do to help a human being get better. They've just got the most experience. And that's where all of the inefficiencies happen in clinics, where you've got people who can't manage themselves managing a bunch of five people. Is it any wonder that it's a revolving door? Every 6 months, somebody's out the door.
It's really important. And that's a really important point, because we changed the structure of our clinic management. So this year, and you have to have the right person for what I'm about to say, I guess. But, you know, we had a, you know, front desk that was she's only been, I think it's a year this month, right? And she was just superstar on the front desk. And, you know, you could see that she was getting a bit bored with that, you know, like, not bored, but like, you know, she was able to do it quite easily. And, you know, we wanted to kind of keep her in the business and know that she could go to the next level. And, you know, in the past, same kind of thing. It's usually whoever's been there the longest and, you know, who's got the most experience. And it's usually a practitioner, you know, or a physio that, you know, then make the clinic manager. And we've now separated those two roles. So we now have, you know, a clinic manager that is a practitioner, and their role is about managing the treatment and care aspects across the team. And now we have the front desk. We've now promoted to like a practice manager or an admin practice manager. You know, it doesn't really matter what the title is, where now she's more responsible for the accountability and the systems and processes in the business, you know, and she's now more managing the day-to-day person in the clinic, you know, making sure that they get their tasks done, making sure that their books are done, and, you know, all the small little things that the practitioner couldn't keep on top of because they're treating. And that's really important, kind of what you said, that, you know, like sometimes we give that role based on respect, and that's what we do in the industry, and, you know, the physio that's been there the longest. And, you know, I still think, you know, good physio should be rewarded as well, you know, but now we've split it into clinical and business, and the business side of things need to be done by, unfortunately, not practitioners. And, you know, that did kind of create a little bit of friction at the start, but when we explained it and when we went through it and when we demonstrated the roles, it was like, yeah, well, actually, I can't do all those things that are on this person's list because I'm treating. And I actually enjoy, you know, keeping the team accountable and making sure treatment outcomes are improved and, you know, all those kind of things. And they still have a huge role in managing the team, but it's not based on the business and the admin side of things. That's now taken away from that person. And I think that's an important point, because we just do it because that's the status quo. That's the norm.
Yeah. I've become more of a fan of now, you know, every year that goes by in business, the internal, you don't get me wrong. You need the odd, you know, every now and again, a heavy kind of weight of experience coming in from somewhere in finance you know, you do. Even in PT, you know, the clinical person, you know, every now and again, you just need to lob somebody in there that's like been there, seen it and done it. But the more that I watch my own businesses and just other companies, I'm becoming a bigger and bigger fan of internal, where there's a girl on your desk right now. If there's three of them, one of them should be coached up to be, or certainly selected, pre-identified over an 18-month period of time to say, look, like that's going to be you in 18 months and I'm going to work with you. You've got the character, you've got the attitude. And even the PTs, I'm not adverse to any of the PTs being anywhere managers, but what I'd be more concerned about is that I can't take you from great clinical to managing a human being the next day just because you're a good clinical. It doesn't make sense. It's like it's never made sense. And I'm gonna overpay for you to be incompetent at managing. But what I am in favor of is if you come to me now, James, and said, look, Paul, look, I've got aspirations. I want to be a manager. I want to grow. I want to know where I'm going. I'm going to get good. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to put you in the role, but I'm not paying you yet, but I'm going to start working with you. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to kind of come and learn from me. I'm going to teach you some balance sheet stuff. I'm going to teach you how the economics work of a company. I'm going to let you do some hiring. I'm going to let you get your teeth into Indeed and start interviewing one or two physios. And then I'm going to start letting you shadow. And then I'm going to let you take a team training. And then I'm going to give you some feedback. And it's going to be quite candid. And then I'm going to give you 10 books to read on human development and, you know, people management and understanding yourself and influence. And then I'll test you on the books. And if you want to do all of this stuff, you really want to be a manager, great. Like that's the path for you to get there. And I'm becoming more of a fan of that internally in all of my companies now, that I'm talking to people, like right down to Macy, who's normally sat here with us. She, like, straight away, she hired Logan, who you spoke to. That's the first step where, all right, this is what you want, Macy. Great. Let's start hiring people. Let's see if you've got good judgment of character of people. Can you spot the type of person that we need in this type of company? If you can, great. You know, now I'm going to give you, here's how I want you to talk, here's how I want you to do this. If I was you, I'd do it like this. You know, try this when the person starts. So you're coaching those leaders from internally. If you see somebody that's got, even if they've only been there for 6 months, I think you can spot it quite quickly that they're the characters, they're the strong, just chuck shit at them and they'll do it. There's no dramas, there's no emotion, they're on time every day, there's no rushing out the door every night because they've got a fucking fire at home that they need to put out. It just becomes very quick. Again, if you're watching it, and that's always the problem. I think the business owners are so busy, they can't see this. And this is what's cost them a lot of money.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. Like you can definitely spot someone, you know, quite quickly that, you know, can progress. And that was the case with this girl. And, you know, then you're also going to have people that come to you and say, I want the next step.
Yep.
And I think you've got to really approach them differently. Like, you know, one of the things when we could see that she was going to be, you know, really good and progress, we maybe didn't have that career pathway yet.
Yeah.
And that was on me to then look at that and try and create that because, cool, we have operations manager and we've got an admin manager as well. But, you know, she wasn't ready to leave the clinic and maybe step into a more management role, but she was ready to take more responsibility of that clinic.
Yep.
You know, and obviously having multi-clinics, we could sense that, you know, there was a difference there, right? And you know, if we didn't then create that role or we didn't create, you know, a future pathway for her, she'd probably want to leave or she'd get bored or, you know, she would ask for shitloads of money and you know, just to keep her and things like that. So I think it's important that you then got to have a look at the career progression. You know, it's easy to look at the career progression for a practitioner. Right. And we can say, put them as a clinic manager and put them as, you know, maybe a senior physio clinic manager, whatever that looks like, because that's naturally what happens in our profession. But some of them aren't ready for that and some of them are. But you should be creating those career pathways for, I think, all levels of the business because, you know, if you've got someone who's really good and competent at their job and you can show them what the next step looks like, and if they then can do that next step, then hiring from within is easy too.
Yeah, love it. All right, last question, and it would be this one. You've been around for obviously a few years. What's the best thing you've learned, like, since you've been around the CEO program and just generally listening to anything that I've put out? What's been the biggest? I'm always curious to know what's been the biggest thing that's helped you.
Biggest thing that's helped me? Preparing for that's hard, right? Preparing for that question's hard. And I think, you know, the first thing is, you know, you need to, if you want to be successful in business, you need business coaches.
Yeah.
I think that's key. What I've also noticed is that, you know, different coaches bring a different element to what you need or what you can learn from a business.
Yeah.
So at the time, I think when I first started listening to you, I had a different business coach. And, you know, what I learned from him at that time was really good in my business. And then it got stale and I wasn't progressing. And then, you know, everything that you were talking about in terms of, you know, marketing, in terms of, you know, people, in terms of, you know, business structure, finances, you know, all that kind of thing, kind of really took me into, okay, well, I need to go in that direction and listen and learn that kind of stuff. So I think the biggest thing in a business, especially that I've seen in physio businesses, is that, you know, a good practitioner doesn't make a good business owner.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't learn business at uni. I didn't do business at school. So if I do want to learn how to have a good business and a successful business, you need to invest that time and learn. And, you know, I've seen guys that haven't done that and they might have a good business, but they're still stuck in what they were doing, you know, 5-10 years ago. I've seen guys that, you know, jump from business coach to business coach and they get what they need and they grow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the biggest lesson is investing in yourself. You know, if that's what you want, if you want to have a successful business, you know, everyone's got their own different goals and aspirations, but if you want to have a successful business, you've got to invest in yourself. And I think one of the biggest things that I've learned from you know, you and the mastermind and stuff like that is people. I think, you know, investing in people is huge. You know, we talked a little bit about our systems and processes earlier, but, you know, they're what make the business tick, but the people drive the business.
100%.
You know, and without that, you can't grow. And, you know, when we're talking about growth in the last 2 years, that was all around people, you know, and having the right drive and the right people. and you know, looking at what we want to do next year to grow again, is putting the right people in the right positions again to be able to grow. You know, yeah. If we don't have the right people in the right positions, then we're not going to grow. We're going to stay stagnant again. And that was one of the things we highlighted that we want to improve next year.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I love it.
That's the biggest things.
That's the, you know, the first point of why, even if you are successful as a business owner without business coaching, you think, why would you do it in spite of that? Like, it must be hard. It must be painful. Like, even if you make, even if you're making money, it must be painfully difficult, fearful, loneliness, the frustration you must live with of, you know, whether or not you're making the right decisions. You can have a reasonable income, but again, it's got to be about progress and the journey, and if you're enjoying it and other people you meet along the way and all that type of stuff that it's for. And I think the thing about people, I made a conscious decision. You said you listened to the podcast, you know, back in the day. At the beginning, it was very much marketing. And you've obviously watched the whole thing, the 5 or 6 years transition, where I'm now talking about people and management. And this whole discussion's been about people and management and leadership.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that partly came because the podcast tracks my, whatever comes out in the podcast is kind of what I'm probably going through, right? It's like, that's the way it is. It's like, I don't just come on and think, oh, I'll make this shit up. It's like, that's probably what's in my head or what's going on in my life at that time. So you've been able to track the evolution of marketing to finance to people, and it's like, it's now structure and it's people. And the reason that I went that route with what I do and teach, because I love it and I'm entrenched in it with 40 plus staff in all my companies. But B, I think it's so difficult for anybody to find somebody that likes people. And I like, I'm a business coach that, take this the right way, most business coaches don't have staff, right? They don't have staff. They hate staff. They don't want staff. They just kind of do their own thing, and that's cool. Whereas I'm building a team around me, and my business gets bigger because I have good people. So I love people and I embrace people and want them to be successful, and I want to help them and coach them. And I watch physio business owners who don't have that mindset, and they just think it's like, the harder they work, the more money they're going to make. And it is, to a point. And then you're like, actually, you're going to need 5 or 6 people around you. Like, you're going to have to crack this nut, dude. Like, doesn't matter who you are, you're going to have to crack the people nut. So I purposely tried to shine a spotlight on people. And the reason that the second book came out, it was, how do we get comfortable as business owners? If we want to be business owners, separate from being a good clinician, then I've got to crack the people code. And that's kind of the path I went down.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you say about the progression, you know, from marketing, you know, finance, people. And but I think that that's a natural progression of a business as well.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, like, I will say, not to give you any props, but like, in Australia, like, a lot of business coaches don't want to talk about, you know, finances and even people to some extent, you know, and they get stuck in the marketing thing, right? Okay. And one of the things that, you know, as your evolution happened, and probably why I became a client as well, was because you were going beyond just the marketing. It's like, okay, if you want to build a successful business, cool, marketing is important and we need it. And you need to have that down pat, and it has to be solid as well. But like, cool, once you've got the clients, like, what are you going to do with them?
Yeah.
You know, and once you've got, you know what to do with them, how do you then invest in your business? And then when you invest in your business, where do you invest it? Yeah. Like, you've got to invest that in people. And I've had so many, you know, business coaches in the before that only did the marketing. And it is a bit of voodoo to talk about finance, you know, as a coach in Australia. So
it's often that they don't, you know, again, being respectful, it's sometimes their business doesn't get big enough for them to be in it. And like, every day I'm having a conversation, every day I'm on the bike, right? I wake up on the morning, my routine, I'm on a like a, what's it called? Like a air bike. I don't know what it's called. Like,
yeah,
a what it's called. There's a name for it. I can't think of it. Like an air bike. You know what I mean? And I'm on that every morning, right? And the first person I ring is Luke, who's in charge of recruitment. What's going on? Who have you got? Who did you speak to yesterday? How many candidates? What do they want? Great. What type of person? Great. And then we're both sat there going, this person might be next. Like, there could be an exit here. Great. Have you got a job ad up? Every day, 20 minutes, I speak to Luke about what's happening in the people department. Then it's like, how they're getting on. How's that new starter doing? How's the cultural indoctrination going? How's this? It's no coincidence that at 7:30 a.m. every morning, I speak to the recruitment guy. right? Like, that's the most important person. Once you pass a certain size in your business, or to get a certain size in your business, I should say, it really becomes about your people and having your finger on the pulse. Even though I don't even, honestly, I shouldn't say this. I almost feel ashamed of it. There's some people in the team, I'm like, it takes me 5 seconds to think, that's that one that he employed the other week, right? And I'm like, great. I obviously, I know them, right? And I say hello, yeah, and what have you. But I don't have that much to do with them, right? But I know Luke does.
Yeah.
So I know them indirectly. Mm. Right. Now, of course, I'll sit and say, you know, that was the weekend or whatever, but I don't really know that much about what they're doing. Luke fills me in on what they're doing. So like that people thing has been pushed down now across different managers for that to come back to me. But I stand by it. It's very difficult to, I think if you crack the people code, it's liberating. If you don't crack the people code, you can do all right in business. But if you're trying to do well in business and you haven't cracked the people code, meaning you've got 15 people, but you haven't got a clue what they're all doing and you just resent them, it must be hell. It must be hell.
Yeah, absolutely. And that can happen.
for the majority. So, but anyway, fantastic. It's been great talking to you. I'm looking forward to coming down to Sydney. When are we coming? January the 7th, but we're getting in a little earlier. As I said, we're going to be in Sydney. So if you are listening to this in Australia or New Zealand, we've just had a client booked for the Finance Skills Day who's flying up from New Zealand. I think he was originally from Sydney and he's just taken the opportunity to go and see some family. So we're bringing everybody together. We'd love to see you. It is at James's recommendation that we're going to be in Balmain. So if it is a shithole and it isn't going to, if it's not nice, it's James's fault. No,
listen, you asked me, where are all the pubs?
You're not supposed to say that in case Natalie's listening, right? Yeah. I said, I just wanted a bit of nightlife. You took that the wrong way. It sounds like we're going to be in the heart of the bloody... There's a pub on every corner. Well, I'll tell Natalie that I'm in the outback. I'm gonna do like a Bush Tucker trial. Do you ever see the I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here? Have you seen it?
The Australian version?
Well, the English one's happening right now.
Okay, no, I haven't seen that one.
It's happening right now, just outside of Brisbane. Watch it. I watch a lot of British TV, even in Orlando. But it's happening right now in Brisbane. So when we're watching it with Natalie on a night, that's what I keep saying. Look, like, don't be thinking I'm going to like some swanky hotel in the middle of Sydney. Like, this is real Australia. Like, I've got bugs and creepy crawlies and all sorts of shit to deal with when I get down there to Australia.
It's funny because I jumped on a call with Simon and he asked, he said, oh, look, I know that, you know, that spiders aren't that bad, but he's trying to like, you know, freak everyone out. Yeah. I'm like, no. Like in summer, there's spiders. Like you're going to see some spiders. And I don't know if that freaked him out. So
yeah. He's I think one of the guys who's coming, the video guys, we're recording the whole thing. So we're gonna have some fun on the camera. And I think he's probably done a bit of research and he'll have found out that there's like snakes and spiders and also, you know what the news will be like, it scares the crap out of you. So yeah. he's panicking a bit now. So they'll have like fake spiders in his bedroom and all sorts of shit. So that'll be what he's getting at. So we'll
you won't need fake ones. So
I remember it well. I do. I love it. I'm very excited to come down, watch a little bit of cricket, hang out. I'm looking forward to coming to your clinic, see your staff and get together with some good physios and some nice people from that part of the world before heading back. It's a whistle stop trip, but I've always said I've any opportunity that I could get in my calendar to come, and that 10-day window has opened up, and I didn't need a second glance, if you like to think that's where I mean where better to be in January. Orlando's nice in January, but Sydney in January, cricket's on, like, just couldn't be more excited to come down.
Hope we got good weather for you.
Well, I know, yeah, I know, but we'll have some fun either way. Like you say, if there's a pub on every corner, we'll be fine. The Brits will be fine as long as there's a pub on every corner. We'll be good.
Yeah.
All right. Where can people find out more? What's your clinic website, social stuff?
Yeah, so we are switch.com.au. You know, all of our team have their own social pages. If you put .switch. You'll find all our team. They've got plenty of stuff all over Instagram as well. And when you want to talk about, you know, people, you know, one of the big things that we do is we try and encourage our team to promote themselves and grow, you know, themselves in confidence as well. So all our team have social media pages, so find it, .switch.
Fantastic. James, you're a star. Thank you very, very much for coming on.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you in what will be probably, what, five or six weeks. It's going
to
come around really quick.
Awesome.
Me too. See you then.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate you. Have a nice day. Cheers.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Paul Gough's audio experience. If you're brand new to Paul's world, head on over to paulsmarketingbook.com where you can get started with his number one best-selling marketing book for physical therapists. Or if you've been listening to the show for a while, you like what you hear and you think that you could benefit from this type of help to accelerate the growth and profitability of your practice, reach out to Paul's team at paul@paulgough.com and tell us exactly what you're looking for. And by the way, if you know someone who would benefit from today's show, please share it with them. And if you've got any questions that you want answered, tweet Paul at @ThePaulGough using the hashtag AskPG. You can also find all of these details over in today's show notes. All right, until next time, have a wonderful day.